The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Final hour has arrived, and we are here at the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. We'll be on tomorrow at the normal time. And we will see all of you there. And this is what it's going to look like tomorrow. We'll be watching Alabama and Mississippi State, a 1-9 game. So far, chalk seems to be holding if you're actually, technically, that's not true.
Last night.
Yeah.
But today, yes, for the
Missouri
most part.
8-9
doesn't matter, Paul. You know that.
Right? Not really. Missouri and Tennessee, that is a really interesting game. Kentucky gets the winner of the next game, which is Vandy in LSU, Auburn in Arkansas. That is a game a lot of people just around town have been chattering about. The winner gets A&M, which arguably is the hottest team going, but that could, you can make that argument for a lot. We were talking about Cal a minute ago. Didn't quite finish that conversation. And you said he was that team is dangerous, and I agree. But I do think for a finite period of time, this is a classic, one of his all-time coaching. It follows maybe one of his worst coaching 6 weeks of his career, but with him, all that matters is how it ends.
It's true. How it ends is going to be how this book is written on this team. It's not going to be about the trials and tribulations throughout the course of the season. Today's youth is really different. Like, and I have three kids. I have an 18-year-old, I have a 15-year-old, and I have a 12-year-old. So I'm dealing with it in my own house on a daily basis. But how they respond to different things and how you can keep them focused even when things are going wrong or they're feeling external pressures on them, I think is really important. I think that's what Cal has done a great job of. Cason Wallace and his move to the point guard position and putting the ball in his hands a lot more has changed the trajectory of this team. They need him healthy. They need him on the floor. They need him playing his best. But then you watch them and see them go into Arkansas and win that game, and Reeves was just sensational with his scoring ability. And I think early in the season in particular, they were trying to play maybe a little bit too much through Oscar Tshiebwe, because Tshiebwe had those big numbers, had the big year, was named the Wooden Award winner, came back to college, and they're like, well, we got the best big man in the country. Let's play through him. It's hard because if you don't have consistency in shooting, and Kentucky fans go, well, look at our percentages, Sean. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, I do. They shoot the 313th most three-pointers, which means they're not shooting a lot. They make about, I think they're 263rd in the country in made three-pointers this season. So they're in the bottom third in both of those two categories. Percentage-wise, yes, they've been pretty solid, but it's not a big part of their game because they want to be able to get to the paint. They want to score in the paint. The best teams in the country score consistently inside the paint. They don't live by the three-point line. Those are the teams that usually end up getting beat in the NCAA tournament. So when I look at how this team has evolved, they're moving the ball better at the offensive end of the floor, which tells me there's a trust that has developed over the course of the season that if I give the ball to you, Paul, you're going to give it back to me if I cut and I get to the right spot and it's a better shot. Early in the season, I thought there was a pass, and then it was like, I shouldn't have passed that ball because I'm not going to get it back even if I cut. So then the cut wasn't as crisp, which means you're not dragging that defensive player and occupying that defensive player that might lead to the screen, pick and roll, and allow Tshiebwe to be open underneath. It's all those little things that happen away from the ball that I think Kentucky has gotten better at, and I think they've gotten better there because they're playing harder. They're playing more focused, and it's essentially that's carried over, obviously, to the defensive end of the floor, which is the most important aspect of this. You have to be able to get stops. You have to sustain stops in the NCAA tournament if you want to advance. I think this team's going to advance and have a good run here in March.
We're talking to Sean Farnham of ESPN. Sean, I want to go a little bit big picture here because Sunday night we're all going to get our brackets out, and people that don't watch a game are going to become basketball fans for 3 weeks. And I know those of you inside the bubble, the cognoscenti of basketball, who I've had my battles with, even though I'm really I was a college basketball fan before I was a college football fan. I know that we trouble you sometimes, but I do want to talk about the health of the game, and I'm not talking about March, but it does seem like it's moving a little bit away from the glory days, other than for a couple of weeks. And for those of you inside this and who live it every day, can anything be done?
Well, Yeah, we could stop with all this realignment, honestly. Because realignment has destroyed college basketball. It is enhanced football and it has destroyed college basketball. The fact that my alma mater, UCLA, is going to go play in the Big Ten. Like, I mean, what are we doing? Right? I mean, that you're losing your traditional rivalries of the Arizona-UCLA basketball game, you know, UCLA-Oregon basketball game. You're losing all of that. And we're doing it because for 6 weeks, we don't mind sending our football team all the way across the country because it's going to give us a couple tens of millions of dollars every single year more than what we were going to get from our own conference, and you're $100 million in debt like UCLA is. That's important.
Yeah.
Okay? So I get that.
If you've never been $100 million in debt, you have no idea how important that is.
Yeah, I've not been in that debt. My wife would never let me be in that much debt, Paul.
I've been close.
She runs all the books. And it's probably a good thing because otherwise I get a red notice and be like, honey, what's this red notice for the electricity thing that we got here? But I think that the focus on football has devalued college basketball. Okay. And for college basketball as a sport, I think there's a couple things. People say, well, we missed the days of having players that were recognizable, that stuck around college for a long period of time. We got plenty of those this year.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Oscar Tshiebwe here in this conference to be one, but Drew Timmy has been in college seemingly for 100 years at Gonzaga. You know, Jaime Jaquez has been there forever at UCLA. You look at Trace Jackson Davis at Indiana. I can keep listing names of guys that stuck around college where NIL has actually kept them in college rather than them wanting to jump out early to try to start the clock and get money and get paid for the game. So there's a positive to that. The recruiting front this year has been a little bit different because some of the top recruits in the nation went to the G League. And so that waters it down from the sizzle and pop of look at this freshman class. And at ESPN, we like the new shiny toys every single year. We go, oh, this freshman class, it's so exciting. You're going to love this guy. Paul, this guy could be a first-round pick. We're already pushing them out the door before they've even played a game. And I think we would behoove ourselves to celebrate them in the present, celebrate them in the moment of what they're doing and what they're accomplishing. And then allowing them to then go in June if they declare to the draft. And we can celebrate what kind of pro they're going to be there at that point in time. When I cover people in college, I care what they're going to do for their team and what they're doing for their school. Are they good enough to win games? Are they good enough to help their team win a national championship? That's what I care about. I don't care if the guy's going to make $150 million in the NBA. That's for Jeff Van Gundy to talk about. That's for Mark Jackson to talk about. I want to talk about them in college. So we've gotten so far away from college basketball that when this clock starts, we're already talking about what they're going to be at the next level, and we're not enjoying them in the present. I think college sports is unique, and you know this, and this conference knows it better. And my time in this conference as an analyst on Super Tuesday for the 4 or 5 years with Nestler, Musburger, and Tessitore, I learned a lot that helps me understand what college passion is really about. See, the difference in college versus the pros is LeBron James can change from the Cleveland Cavaliers and come play for the Lakers, and there are kids in Cleveland that will wear Lakers jerseys because they were fans of LeBron James. There is never going to be a fan that is an Alabama fan that is going to all of a sudden start wearing purple and say they're rooting for LSU. An LSU fan is not going to wear orange and say they're rooting for Tennessee. And what makes college unique is that you are who you are. Your loyalty will never change. I'm a Bruin. I'm never going to wear USC colors. You're never going to see it, even if my son goes to school there, which he might. But I'm not wearing those colors. And we have to start honoring those same traditions we see in college football on the basketball side of things. And I think that's not only on the schools. It's not only in scheduling and how you can uptick your schedule to make more important games throughout the course of those months where college football is going on that fans will want to see, but scheduling them away from Saturdays so they're actually visible. I think that's really important in the non-conference. We can own Tuesday night. We can own Wednesday night. We can own Thursday night for the most part because there is Thursday football on ESPN. But we can still own those nights and then still let college football have their Saturdays and have the national dialogue all throughout the course of the week. But how we schedule, how we organize our conference schedules, I think are really, really important for the longevity of this game and being able to still cut through and have people watch it then rather than just watching it for 3 weeks in the NCAA tournament and this week on ESPN and Champ Week.
And, again, I don't know. I mean, you work at ESPN, and one of the top executives was by here talking to us, talking to you. He didn't know me.
Yes, he did. He said he's coming back. He knew you were on air. He didn't want to bother you.
But I say that because ESPN plays a big role in all this because they're trying to schedule these marquee games in November and December at wherever, whether it's in Bermuda, Bahamas, or Maui, or wherever. But they're still just shoehorned into a spot between a football game half the time.
Well, I think one of the things that would benefit us is if we took Feast Week and we moved it into the late January, between January and February, like that final week of January, and we could get all conferences to agree that that's going to be a week where we're going to have non-conference tournaments right. and events. And we could schedule it as such that people would be like, wow, every game could be spectacular. These fields would be great.
The Big 12 SEC thing was phenomenal. Of course, it's gone now.
Right, but imagine if we expanded that out and we had, like, the Phil Knight Invitational right. instead of taking place in November, when a lot of people don't, still, no. even today, don't even realize it happened this no. year, which was the announcement that Brandon Miller was going to be a star at the college level and Alabama was going to be legitimate. And then get to where it is now, and if you had that same event at the end of January, after college football is done, it would garner some more attention. We have to be more creative in how we schedule. Like Steve Lavin, when he was my coach at UCLA, actually did a great job. When we played USC, we had an off day on Saturday. We would always play USC on a Wednesday. On that Saturday, we had a game. Both times, whether it was at home or on the road. We played Louisville. We played North Carolina. We played Duke. We played Syracuse during my 4 years, home and away. And you would go and you would play Duke in the middle of conference play in late February. And it was on ABC. Vital was on the call with Musburger. It was a big, big deal. And those games cut through and resonate. We need more of that, not less. And conferences have to start working. And some of these alliances that we talk about amongst conference commissioners, I think are really important to enhance the scheduling of college basketball. We see those games happen on the women's side. We see South Carolina play UConn.
Saw that recently.
And it's on ABC. And everybody watches. We need to be more creative and do that on the men's side to create those matchups. Imagine if Alabama played Gonzaga 2 weeks ago instead of in the middle of December in Birmingham. Like, if they would have played 2 weeks ago, more people would have probably watched that game. And that game was on CBS. So we can do that, but we have to be willing to work with these conferences, and these conferences have to be willing to understand the value of those games. Yeah, you might take a loss late in the season, but the value for the sport and the health of the sport should come before a loss on the road for your team in, you know, late February or late January. You know, take that loss, take that game, cut through, get people to watch it. Because if you watch the product itself is pretty good. The health of the game itself on the court, really good. But the health of the game in the public's eyes, not good.
We close here, and we've taken too much of your time, but you know the people that make these decisions. I'm sure you've seen them. They're here.
Yeah. No, I try to talk to them about it.
Are they amenable?
I think that most people understand something has to change. I think there's a difference in how they're going to go about it. I think for right now, for a lot of these commissioners, the unsettling standard of where teams are going to play, what conference they're going to be in. You know, Big 12 commissioner yesterday was openly said, we're talking to Gonzaga. Okay, well, Mark Few, good luck at your NCAA press conference. That's the first, second, and third question you're going to be asked. It's not going to be about Drew Timmy. It's not going to be about your team. It's going to be, are you moving to the Big 12? And that's an administrative thing that he shouldn't have to deal with, but he's going to. The Pac-12 situation is very unsettling right now. The West region of the United States is almost non-existent in the landscape of college athletics at the elite level. And that is sad as a person who lives in Los Angeles, who played basketball at UCLA at a time when the conference was outstanding. But with USC and UCLA vacating that conference, the Pac-12 is in peril right now. And George Kliavkoff, I've known for 7 years. He's got to get this media rights deal locked in. They got to figure out, are they expanding? Is it really going to be SMU and San Diego State? Is that enough to save the conference and keep everybody there? Is the money going to be there? Because the money is really important right now to a lot of those schools. But also the exposure.
If you add those two, I know everybody can make an argument, but from a distance, it doesn't seem like.
I think San Diego State is geographically important because from the Bay Area school, to have a school within 6 hours driving distance is important. To be able to tap into your L.A. alumni base is important, even if it's in San Diego. From a football perspective, they're okay. Yeah. From a basketball perspective, they're better. Brian Dutcher's done a great job taking them to the tournament every single year. But does it move the needle? Does anybody – let's put it this way.
No.
Does anybody in this region of the United States going to be like, oh, my gosh, Thursday night, San Diego State's
my
playing Arizona.
No.
I got to watch.
I was talking about the same thing with SMU, and I got the argument. But none of the arguments are compelling.
Here's the only argument that you can make for SMU. It opens up a time slot. Because it gets you out of the Pacific time zone. So now you're in the Central time zone. But the idea that Dallas fans. How many SMU fans are in Dallas?
Well, that's like years ago I landed at LaGuardia and it said, welcome to the Big Ten. And I'm like, who's in the Big Ten here? It took me It was midnight, and I was hungover. But it still works. It was Rutgers.
I think that's the problem right now. So the Pac-12 has got to figure out its answer first, and I think that will help stabilize the West region.
We thank you. You've been so kind.
Anytime. You're the best.
This has been an amazing conversation for those. Sean Farnham, we'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back in Nashville, the lull before the evening where Arkansas will be the late game, and Will Moclair joining us covers the Razorbacks. And Will, good to talk to you. And I don't need
thanks for inviting me.
It's we had Coach Muss on yesterday. Always, well, we shouldn't say he's one of our favorites, but he is.
He's a cool guy.
He really is.
He's fun to cover. He's exciting. He really, you know, he has brought so much of a spark to Fayetteville. It's unbelievable. The Muss bus, it's a bus that everybody seems to be on.
I mean, this is a program that certainly has one of the great traditions in the SEC, before the SEC days under Nolan. Even you thought Mike Anderson would get it done. He didn't.
Sure.
He's struggling to get it done now and at St. John's. But how did this happen, and how did it happen so quickly?
Muss is a recruiter. If I had to put a diagnosis on this team, I've been covering them for about 2 years now, following along. And I believe the true difference with Muss is that NBA caliber training that he brings to the table. He comes in and he tells players on the road in their living room, I can make you an NBA caliber player. And that's how you bring in McDonald All-Americans. Right. That's how you build a program like this. And there's more five stars coming in. This is a program which has had a rocky road this season, losing Trevin Brazil. Obviously, Nick Smith Jr., the trials and tribulations that he had this season. Thankfully, he's back. But it has just been a long road where so much talent, and you see it blending at different points in the season, and now we're at a point where we're coming off Alabama, Tennessee, and then Kentucky, three hard losses in the SEC, and you wonder where we can put it together. Florida, Georgia, those were two amazing wins. I, after the Florida game, really thought, wow, Final Four, back on the table, but it's just, it's a very interesting group of young kids.
And by the way, that's the expectation. I'll never forget when this recruiting class came in. I mean, I'm talking to friends out where you are, and they're saying this team could win the national championship.
It could. Yeah. On a good day, the highs and the lows, talking to people in the city of Fayetteville, the heckle and jive, the highs and the lows, you really don't know what this team is going to bring on a different day. The lows are low, but the highs are so high, especially in that Florida game where you just see everybody meshing. The moment you see those two Mitchell twins, the transfers from Rhode Island, the moment you see a Jordan Walsh or a Jalen Graham, the moment you see them hit 12 points, 10 points, it's a problem for the other team. It's just making sure that the ball is distributed. And I don't know if that's a Nick thing. I don't know if that is a Must thing. But the moment that ball begins to move around and be shared, this team is unstoppable. And I'm not just saying that as somebody who covers the team.
No. He has been remarkable to watch in his whole career, in recent years in the NCAA tournament. What makes him such a great March coach?
You know, that is a tough question right there. But it is the energy that he brings on the sidelines. It's the trust that he puts in his players. Devontae Davis, Nick Smith Jr. You see Nick calling timeouts on his own now. And that is confidence that I believe Musk gives him off the court. Devo, he is a true outspoken junior. But I'll tell you, the confidence that he puts in his players, it looks like hard love on the court, but I believe it is true love off the court and true support in the locker room.
Well, before we don't have a lot of time. This game tonight, we know where Arkansas
is. It's chippy.
We know Arkansas is going to the tournament, but what are they trying to accomplish here?
I think today is statement day. You've obviously had three very tough losses coming into this tournament. You've already seen Auburn once this season. I believe it was a 72-59 loss. Right. We didn't have Nick Smith in that game. Sorry. The Razorbacks did not have Nick Smith in that game. This game, I truly believe, quad one win coming in. You got to make your mark. There's probably a lot of people out there who have bet on Auburn, but I do believe that this is going to be a very close game, and I think Arkansas will be able to pull this one out. Hmm.
Can the audience give me a second while I go to my betting app?
Yeah. I usually know the line off the top of my head. I'm not sure what it is today. I'm sure Arkansas is a dog. I'm not sure by how many.
I don't know.
I'm not here to give betting advice.
No, I'm not. And I really don't. I have no earthly idea what the line is.
Yeah. I would bet 6 or 7. -3.
So Arkansas is favored?
No. Well, yes. Arkansas is favored. Okay. I don't know how that one shakes out. I guess everybody really believes in Nick Smith Jr. Well, I wish they were faded. I would have hammered that.
Man, you just destroyed the betting line right now in Vegas. It looks like triple witching day on the New York Stock Exchange. Well, thanks. I know we didn't have a lot of time, but you're busy.
I appreciate you having us
on with TV and everything else. Thank you for coming by.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
You bet. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hey, welcome back. We are live in Nashville, and our next guest, Neil McCready. It's been so long since I've seen you. I almost didn't recognize you, but we used to work together.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
It had. I, Neil has had an amazing career. He finally had enough of Alabama, went to Mississippi, and it's great to see you again.
Good to see you, Paul.
It is certainly so much happening in Mississippi. I want to start with the speculation about the next basketball coach in terms of Chris Beard. What do you know?
I think it's basically done. You know, it's never done until it's done, but at this point, so much speculation is out there, it doesn't get refuted that you've done this for a while. That means it's about done. I was just told nothing's imminent in terms of an announcement, but if you told me an announcement got made tomorrow, Saturday, I'd buy it. And, you know, I think it's obviously going to be a hire that's going to get a lot of criticism. It's going to get a lot of analysis. And then on the flip side, I think it's kind of an announcement on Ole Miss's part that they're getting really serious about college basketball.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a side story that nobody really knows, and you've heard a lot more than I have, but I heard a story today from, you know, somebody I thought was pretty reliable that now is casting some doubt on the whole thing.
Yeah.
I realize, you grew up in the newspaper business, and you just don't throw out speculation, but your best guess on how the school has gone through this, because there's a lot of information, but how do you know how reliable it is?
You know, I think when they started this, Paul, it was almost for process of elimination purposes, right? It was almost so that they could say, hey, we dug into that,
okay,
can't do it. And then I think as they dug into it, they saw that maybe it wasn't exactly what had been reported. Maybe it was a little more complex, a little more nuanced. And as they went along, they thought, you know what, not only can we do this, but we probably should do this. It's not every, you know, look, nothing against Ole Miss, right? But without some baggage, Chris Beard doesn't pick up the phone when Ole Miss calls.
No.
And so you have an opportunity to add an elite coach who took Texas Tech to the national championship game, lost in overtime to Virginia, went to another Elite Eight, took Little Rock to the second round, was just putting together a phenomenal program at Texas. Suddenly he's available to you. They did a deep dive, and obviously they're comfortable with it. It's going to get criticized, but at the end of the day, the only people who truly know what happened that night in Austin are two people.
Yeah, and listen, the people that have already made up their mind are going to say what they have to say, and you know, you and I have seen a lot. And I mean, Hugh Freeze just landed in Auburn. You covered him. I don't know your thoughts on that July 20th day many years ago, but it would have probably been tough to think he would be back in the SEC in a couple of years, or maybe even soon. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, you know, and I think Hugh paid the price for that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he lost a job in his home state that he had built and walked away from $15, $16, $17 million and had to sort of rebuild his career. And people will say, well, Chris Beard didn't have to wait that long.
No.
But look, Chris Beard lost his dream job. You know, I mean, he wanted the Texas job. That was a job that he'd always coveted. He got that job and was building a power there. I mean, they're going to be probably a two seed in the tournament when it gets announced on Sunday. And he's not going to be it's not going to be a $6 million a year deal.
But he's not following the path that I think a lot of people lay out. And
right.
It's like, you know, the Bobby Petrino situation where he needs to go somewhere. For
right.
I don't know who comes up with that. We talk about it in our profession. But clearly, and by the way, athletic directors must listen because they usually don't touch these guys for a couple of years.
I think Keith Carter deserves a lot of credit for this. This is twice now, you know, that a lot of people said you couldn't hire Lane Kiffin.
Right.
And he went and talked to Lane Kiffin, and over the course of that week decided that, no, we probably need to hire Lane Kiffin. And the same thing here. I mean, it's an opportunity to hire an elite coach. And if you don't do it, somebody else will do it. And look around this league. I mean, you've got – like tonight, Auburn and Arkansas are about to play. Bruce Pearl just took Auburn to the Final Four, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Eric Musselman's had Arkansas in back-to-back Elite Eights. They're the 7-10 seed in this tournament.
Yeah.
You know, Ole Miss is now, after today, 8-31 in their last 39 games against SEC teams. It's an opportunity to take a really big swing, and they're taking it.
Talking to Neil McCready, Neil, you've covered Auburn, and obviously you're embedded with the Ole Miss culture. Today, I want to go back to Lane Kiffin for a second, because that remains a baffling story. Now you're hearing Auburn players talk about, Ole Miss players talk about how distracting it was. You were at ground zero during all that. What happened?
I don't know. I mean, I have some thoughts, I have some theories, but at the end of the day, I don't exactly know. The people that say it was a media creation are kidding themselves. Obviously, Lane Kiffin was Auburn's top target. I think for the longest time, and I don't know this, Lane never said this, but kind of reading the tea leaves, it sounds like Lane gave it serious consideration, maybe leaned towards taking it. I think there were some family considerations. And then, you know, in the way that only Lane can do something, he sort of challenged Ole Miss to, from an NIL standpoint, and they met the challenge. Not only did they meet it, they sort of exceeded it.
Yeah.
And I think that changed the calculus over the last 48, 72 hours of that decision. When it came time to make a decision, I think he just decided to stay where he was.
And I want to say I don't know anything. I just happened to be there a couple of times this year, the week of the Alabama game, and I watched something, and it's really struck with me. His son was there with a couple of friends, and he was telling me, I saw Lane Kiffin the next day too, and his kids were there, and they wanted pictures with Tebow. And it just, I kept thinking, and because Lane kept talking about how much his son likes coming there, and I'm like going, this is a guy that's about to go to Auburn. There's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
Maybe there was something to that.
I think there was something to it. And I think, you know, I always try to tell people, I don't think Lane Kiffin thinks conventionally.
No.
I don't think he looks at Auburn and Ole Miss and says, you know, Auburn's got a more storied history, or Auburn's got more tradition, or Auburn's got more this or a bigger whatever. I don't think he thinks like that. Like, the majority of football coaches, given that option, they choose to go to Auburn. I just think he thinks differently, and then I also think that he can be a little impetuous, and it can come down to how he feels on a given day. I think on that Monday or Tuesday of that week, I think most people at Ole Miss thought he was leaving.
Yeah.
And then on Wednesday, something shifted. And whether that was a family thing, maybe one of his kids, maybe both of his, I don't know. I wasn't inside that room.
I want to spend a minute with you talking about the media, because you've had such an interesting journey you were in the newspaper business when it was still pretty relevant.
Yeah.
You're in a different world now. You've done radio. I do this every day. I don't know where we are, but where are we?
It's worked out well for you.
Well, it has. I'm fascinated by the industry, and for those who have been at every level, which you have.
Yeah, I've kind of seen all of it. When I left Mobile, I told the story. My last assignment in Mobile was the 2008 SEC tournament, the Tornado tournament. And I remember walking out of that building on Friday night, wondering if the tournament was going to get canceled, and kind of walking back to my hotel in Atlanta. And I mean, there was a part of me that wanted to grab my phone and call Mobile and beg for my job back. Like, what am I doing? You know, I'm getting out of traditional media. And so many people were like, you're making such a mistake. And who knows, maybe I did, but I just kind of looked at newspapers and I said, they're not going to make it. And you look at where we are today, like on my beat, yeah, there's some newspapers on the beat, but the beat is kind of controlled by sites. And they're the ones that are sort of the voice of record, if you will. And I don't know, it's as a traditional newspaper guy who still considers himself a Big J journalist, it's confusing to this day. But I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for a young person breaking into our field right now. I mean, I don't even know how you would get traction.
Yeah, and again, the coverage of it is so different. I almost feel like, you know, like Saban and NIL, is that you kind of resist it until you finally better embrace it, because it's not the same. It's not even what it was a year or two ago.
No, it's changed. It's changed dramatically. Our field has, in the same way that the sport that we're covering has changed so incredibly. And you know, you look at, to your analogy, you look at like all the speculation that I'm sure you do daily about what's going to happen with conference realignment. We're probably not done. Our field's probably not done changing either. I mean, you've been able to make that transition from what you were doing in Birmingham with radio to now you're more of a TV voice than you are a radio guy, even though you still sort of do a traditional radio show, but not on a radio medium. You've had to figure out how to make that growth, I suppose.
But it used to frustrate me, Neil, about the public. But I really have an answer. But as somebody who covers one school and interacts with the fan base and knows the fan base, what do fans want? Because they're really the only people that matter.
Yeah, they're all that matter. They want to be entertained, I think. They want to be informed. And look, there's a pressure in my field to be a homer. I resist it. I don't feel that. I don't consider myself a fan. I'm not. And that irritates some people, and other people like that. I don't know. I don't really know the answer to what they want. I think they want a entertaining product that's well produced and that there's obviously some care involved in it. We do a daily podcast that's grown now for 10 years, and I think people just, they want consistency. That's one of the things you've been able to give people all these years, is that consistent presence. That's why all these people come up to you during all the commercial breaks. That's, you're probably more to them than the columnist that you were when you were in Birmingham and Mobile.
But it's fascinating, though, but I still think back, and again, I am a newspaper traditionalist, having done it for so long, while it really was important. And I mean, I think about those days, and maybe we all thought too much of ourselves, but I think, man, that, you know, I'm going to write a column today, and it's really good. And the thing about television, I mean, I had a lady come up to me and say, you know, I watch you every night during dinner. I mean, television is just something it's an inescapable medium. And if you're, I think that it's not being on television, it's being on for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that your columns were absolutely influential. My very first day on the Auburn beat was August of, what was that, 98? Terry Bowden says to me, something about Finebaum. He was very worked up about Finebaum, and I said, look, Terry, I was terrified. It was my first day on the beat. I was like, I don't control what he writes, and I could tell that, well, what Paul writes on a given day is probably going to impact how I'm treated a little bit on this beat. So, but yeah, it's fascinating how much it's changed in the 15 years since I got out of traditional media. So I'm sure your journey's even more fascinating.
Well, I will say this about Terry Bowden. I've talked to him many, many times since then. There was no shortage of entertainment from him, and it didn't matter what he did on the field. His off-the-field stuff was far more interesting.
That's for sure. Trying to catch up with it in about a month's time on that beat for the first time, was quite an indoctrination.
Well, I can't thank you enough. I've just had a great time catching up with you again, and I hope when we head that way, we can keep and continue this, because
absolutely,
there aren't that many people. I haven't known you that long, but it's a lot for most in the world that I live in right now. It's a lifetime.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Neil McCready, joining us here. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast. The Paul Finebaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern. Thank you for listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast. The Paul Finebaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.